The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
The Catholic bishops are moving on this resolution that would prevent you and others who've supported abortion from receiving communion. Are you concerned about the rift in the Catholic Church, and how do you feel personally about that?
That's a private matter, and I don't think that's going to happen. Thank you.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that's the President of the United States. Let's talk today a little bit about what a truly Catholic president would or really should say. We had this tragic event, didn't we, the other day, a couple days ago, the killing of six people at the Covenant School down in Nashville. It split our nation. The perpetrator of this horrific crime was Audrey Hale, was a woman who identified on social media as a man. She was a graduate of the school that she went in and shot up. It's not clear really what the motive was, whether she had a grudge because she had another school targeted but decided against it because it had too much security. It had more than the Covenant School that she went into. So Hale also left behind a manifesto, but for some reason, Nashville police aren't releasing that yet, which looks like they're yielding to the demands of the radical transgender rights groups. Should we know what this person's manifesto was? I mean, there's arguments for and against it. You don't want to give her voice, right? I get that. But is there a reason that they haven't let this out? Those groups have been claiming that Hale was the victim in this crime because she identified as trans and she was naturally oppressed. And look, we have to pray for her. I just want to say that before going any further, as well as the victims. I mean, most of these kids, if you look at Columbine or Virginia Tech or any of these other places where mass shootings have taken place, quite often bullying was involved or other forms of abuse or alienation. A lot of things drove that type of behavior, and everybody in this is wounded. But, you know, a lot of people are saying, look, Drew, it doesn't matter if you're oppressed, you don't go killing other people. And that's true. Absolutely. Especially little kids. I mean, think of the families that were destroyed. So when President Joe Biden addressed the nation about this the other day, I don't want to throw stones at the president. I just want to take a look at the reaction. He didn't seem too torn up about it. You know, he came out joking about ice cream. The only reason he came down to talk was because he heard there was ice cream being served. That's kind of how he was joking. He went on to call on Congress to ban so-called assault weapons, similar to the ones that Hale used. And again, it looks like another school shooting, another horrible situation over which we have no control, but can also look like another part of the culture war that's going on around us. A war where we're on the sidelines looking on as people really knock each other around, sometimes literally here. So I thought we'd talk about it today with Dr. Michael Piculek. Sorry, my screen went blank. He sees things a little bit differently. He believes that each of us have a moral agency. We have a responsibility to take control of the things that we can control. And if each of us does that, then, you know, we'll help change the culture. Dr. Piculek is a professor of social research at the Bush School of Business and Catholic University of America, and he joins me now. Hey, doctor, thank you for your time. Good afternoon.
Hey, Drew, thanks for what you do, and that was a great setup, great introduction.
I appreciate it. People get angry if I talk about the president. I am frustrated by his, as a Catholic, his betrayal of my Catholic values, of the Catholic Church when it comes to life, when it comes to a lot of these issues. These kinds of situations that we see, like these shootings, are horrific. You know, and they tend to paralyze a lot of people. They throw up their hands and they say, "There's nothing we can really do." What's your takeaway from this particular case and those who might feel that way, as well as the president's response to all this?
Well, there's a lot there. I find it very difficult to fathom the particular case because, you know, they used to use this word, the criminally insane. I mean, what does it mean to walk up to a 9-year-old child with a gun and just shoot the child in the head? I mean, to be famous. I mean, it's like the last thing Audrey Hale texted to her friend, as you're going to read about me in the papers, but also I want to die. But why take an innocent 9-year-old kid with you? I don't think there's really any logic there. It is, in some very deep sense, insane. You know, people call it demonic, and they mean it seems to be pure malice, pure hatred. We know the devil hates the human race. He hates children. Why do these mass killers go to schools? Why do they kill innocent children? Yeah. That's like their first target.
So true.
So I don't, you know, figure out what's going on with her and... Yeah. No, to me, that's, you can't, because it's irrational. But this piece I wrote in the Catholic thing, I said that when you think about society the way economists do, they see slight motives and trends or incentives that go throughout all of society. It kind of tilts people in certain directions in subtle ways. And then you see that manifested in the behavior of individuals.
Yeah.
So I asked myself, well, what are some of the trends and motives we see in our society? Well, you played that clip from President Biden. He described his position on abortion and his relationship to the church as a private matter. Well, wait a second. You know, the right to life is in the Declaration of Independence. It's kind of the foundational right of our whole society. So you can't say that that's private. And he would certainly not maintain that if somebody were in favor of enslaving people, for example. He would say, no, that's a public sinner. That's gross scandal. Of course the bishops could deny communion to somebody who wanted to reinstate black slavery, right? Of course that's the case. Of course an anti-Semitic who wanted to eliminate all the Jews could be denied communion. But I'm afraid his position is logically equivalent. He picked out a class of human beings he thinks kind of open season on, and he's not going to defend them.
Yeah.
So he's a public sinner of a very, very, very bad sort. And, you know, look, we have a culture of death in our society. Mother Teresa pointed out. She said, if a mother can kill her unborn child, I can kill you. You can kill me. It's just the way we live.
You know, it's such a great point. And Maggie and I were listening to a little bit of audio before the show. This comes from Cardinal Arenzi, who kind of makes that same case. You know, Mother Teresa said it so simply and so eloquently. Listen to the Cardinal, what he had to say.
To the person who says, personally, I am against abortion, but then if people want to do it, I leave them free, you could say, you are a member of the Senate or the Congress. Personally, I am not in favor of shooting the whole lot of you. But if somebody else wants to shoot all of you in the Senate or all of you in Congress, it's just pro-choice for that person. But personally, I'm not in favor. That is what he is saying. Once people ask me, if a person votes for abortion, can the person receive Holy Communion? My reply was, do you really need a cardinal from the Vatican to answer that? Get the children for First Communion and say to them, somebody votes for the killing of unborn babies and says, I voted for that, I will vote for that every time. And these babies are killed, not one or two, but in millions. And that person says, I'm a practicing Catholic. Should that person receive communion next Sunday? The children for First Communion will answer you that at the drop of a hat. You don't need a cardinal to answer that.
Yeah, I love that. It's so simple, isn't it? Like Mother Teresa, like the Cardinal, ask a kid, how do we get to this point where we have world leaders like the president here who can somehow justify and make the cases that he makes? I don't understand it. I don't know what it's a bedimming of the mind. It's a hardening of the heart. I mean, and to your point, it really is demonic. In the Catholic Thing article you wrote, you actually said this. Maybe you can expand on it because I think it was a great point. You said that you put this imagery, you know, in the the president said this. Like, he says, I want all Americans to take responsibility for the common good that is our nation's culture. You can't change the world, but you can change your own life. If shooting down children in cold blood strikes you as demonic, not my words, but what you yourself say, then reject anything occult and demonic, anything that even hints of it, hints at it in your own lives. Will you expand on that?
It's something that disturbs me quite a lot, looking on at our society. And I think that as we kind of, you can't get involved in things like murder or even fornication and gross sexual immorality without really inviting the devil in.
Yeah.
And I think we're getting to a kind of point of moral collapse in our society, frankly, where devils are real. I wrote a book on the Gospel of Mark. In the beginning of the Gospel of Mark, Jesus impresses Peter most of all by how he expels demons. And somebody wrote to me, actually, my daughter, and said, well, why are there all these demons being expelled in the New Testament? We don't see demons. And at first, I kind of gave an explanation and so on. And I've thought about it over the years. It's probably 5 years ago since my daughter asked me the question. And I'd be disposed to see just as many demons now as there were then. Of course, the saints who become very holy experience this directly, like Padre Pio or John Vianney. They're kept awake at night by devils attacking them, actually. Yeah. They have a special insight into what's going on. So, households with used to be Ouija boards, but, spells and incantations and curses are becoming very common now. Hexes, any kind of witchcraft that's very widespread now. You have a fascination with the occult. There's a story in the Wall Street Journal earlier this week about how the studios think that horror is the way to go this year, and they've planned 30 horror films. And it's not things like, The Mummy or The Creature from the Black Lagoon. It's, so-called sophisticated horror usually involves something that's demonic. I mean, sometimes it's psychological, sometimes it's an alien. But a lot of it is possessed dolls and psychopathic killers. This fascination with these sadistic murderers.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you have pornography, which is like a pipeline to hell. And this is, widespread throughout our society. And I'm very disturbed by it. I think that, if you study the history of the Weimar Republic and Nazi Germany, there's a lot of occult that was practiced then. I don't think it portends anything particularly good. So I thought that if today you had a president like Washington back in the, kind of the innocent days, we just warned Americans, look, keep to religion because, the common person needs religion in order to remain upright, and we can't have this republic unless people are virtuous. What would be the equivalent today? Well, we're pretty far down a path. I think it would be a president actually being a little bit honest about this.
Yeah. No, that's so true. And again, that was an imaginary speech for how a truly Catholic president would respond. And you can read his article in The Catholic Thing. Just your point on the demons, I feel like I've been talking about it a lot recently. We've had an exorcist on not too long ago. There's a rise in it. There's actually so much demonic activity now that there's a shortage of them in Rome and even here in our own country. But you think about where we are. I mean, we've got pornography that's rampant, and you see you see the attack on the family, right? You see it on marriage, and you see it on family, and you see it on life. And those are all the hallmarks of the evil one. In terms of your view here, I mean, where do we go from here? How do we change it? We've got a Catholic president who's in office right now, who I think is scandalous in the things that he does, because a lot of people look to Catholics and they see him as the example of what a Catholic should be. And yet he's a guy who's advancing all of these very things, this attack on family, this attack on life, right? Supporting the redefinition of marriage. It's to me, it's really frustrating. I don't know I don't know if there's an answer to that. But I'd love your thoughts.
Yeah, a lot of people I think they reason the wrong way about this. They say, well, he has a lot of responsibilities, a lot of pressure on him to say this and so on. I think it works kind of the other way around. It's like, if you have a lot of responsibility, you ought to be saying X, and you're saying not X, it magnifies the wrongness of what you're doing. It's like a priest or a bishop who's involved in sexual abuse. It's like, okay, that's pretty bad if it's just an ordinary person, but it's a man of the cloth, a cleric, somebody who, you know, then it becomes, now you're tempted to use the demonic word. It's, there's something really, really, really wrong about that. So you have a president who's supposed to be leading the country in the fundamental rights and natural law, natural rights basis of our freedom, who's actually so hell-bent against this that he's now telling people that they're sinning if they take a different view against him.
Yeah.
That's actually monstrous. It's not even, oh, you know, he's Joe Biden, Uncle Joe, we'll cut him some slack. It's actually much, much worse than you or I saying stuff like that. Yeah. Much worse. Yeah.
My guest today is Dr. Michael Pakulik. If you want to join us, the number's 888-914-9149. Let's go to the phones. Denise has been waiting to join the conversation. Doctor, she's got a point for you. She's listening in Chicago. Hi, Denise.
Thank you. I am a good friend of Joe Biden's pastor at Holy Trinity Church in Washington, D.C. He was formerly a high school friend and a college friend. And this priest told me that he has, you know, he gives communion to Joe Biden. He sees him reverently receive the Eucharist. He said he will stay after church and pray. He sees tremendous reverence in his attitude towards the Eucharist. But yet, I think to myself, okay, he also mentioned that we shouldn't weaponize the Eucharist. Mm-hmm. And the Pope has said that also. So by weaponizing, he means denying people the Eucharist that we feel are not worthy.
Yeah. Hey, Denise, thank you. And Doctor, we can talk about that. And we don't know the mind or the heart of Joe Biden. We know his actions. We know his words. Is there a disconnect where perhaps, you know, he does have this true belief in, you know, he talked about, you know, fasting during Lent and his prayer. And you heard Denise say, you know, that he receives the Eucharist very reverently. I don't know how you can do both, have a reverence and deep devotion for what the church teaches. And at the same time, very objectively and very visibly, you know, advance things that are diametrically opposed to its teachings. But your thought here, and we can also talk about weaponizing the Eucharist. I think it's another really good point. It's one of the arguments that a lot of people use in saying, hey, look, I'm going to give them the Eucharist. It should not be a political tool. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, I don't want to get into second guess the Pope, but, you know, he also did say abortion is like hiring a hitman. And if you had a hitman coming up to receive communion and he was very sincere and devout and devoted, don't you think you have to instruct? There is such a thing as ignorance in people who are good intentioned, and we know what the saying says, we're good intentions, you know, the paved, a certain pathway is paved with good intentions. So that doesn't mean a lot to me. It's, you know, our Lord says, you know, it's by your deeds.
Yeah.
You will know them, not by, you know, a pious look on somebody's face. The Pharisees had fantastic pious looks.
Yeah, that's true. Do you think we need more fraternal correction? I mean, that's charitable, and actually it's loving.
Of course. Yeah. I don't know. I'd want to, Denise, talk to this pastor and say, so you're confident that his soul is fine because he looks pious when he receives the Eucharist. You know, our Lord says, if you love me, keep my commandments.
Yeah. We live in a strange time. I did a story the other day. I think it was yesterday. We talked about that Wall Street Journal poll that came out. I think you're familiar with it. There's this serious drop in the number of people who are now holding on to American values. I know you quoted what our founding father said about how important it is for the success of this Democratic Republic to be based on virtue, right? God.
Yes.
And yet we see a serious decrease in patriotism, right? And I believe God and family and country are critical to the success of our nation. And yet we're seeing, at least in this data, all those in decrease. What's the main contributor to it, and what do you think we need to do to change it? Why are we seeing that today?
Education. So, these things don't just happen. It's just, we just woke up and discovered that, my kids don't believe in God anymore and they hate our country. I mean, that didn't come from nowhere. My kids haven't been going to public schools in a long time, but I remember one of them, when she was very young, had picked up that there were these speech rules and you could not even talk about God or refer to God. That was just forbidden. Now, how healthy is it to take an 8-year-old girl and put her in an environment for 6 hours a day where she's actually come to believe there's a self-censoring that you cannot talk about what is supposed to be the most important thing in your life? So, and it's much, much worse now. I mean, that was 15, 20 years ago. So that it's much worse now. No, the most important thing now for Christians is the reform of education, because the schools are supposed to be agents of the parents. They're supposed to carry out the wishes of the parents. And if parents want a religious education for their kids, they can't get it from the public schools. As Leo XIII says in Rerum Novarum, they'd rightly be concerned that this kind of government is not serving them any longer. It has to provide an opportunity and not double charge somebody. You take out large amounts of money from their taxes to pay for a public school system, and then they have to pay again for money that's already been taxed. Like that money they're paying for tuition has already been taxed. So it's maybe 70% of what they earn. And then they've been taxed again through the property taxes.
That's so true. That's such a good point.
That's very unjust.
Great, great point. We have a couple of minutes, so I'm going to grab a couple of calls for you. Martha's listening in California. Martha, thanks for joining the conversation. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Drew. And I just wanted to say that I've committed the sin of abortion, and I can't see myself receiving communion if I didn't go to confession. So for that last caller who said that the priest of Joe Biden, can he justify giving communion to somebody that does everything opposite of what God teaches? I cannot fathom.
And Martha, just so I'm clear, I don't know whether it's hypothetical or you did have an abortion and you went to confession. If you went to confession, I just want to make it clear to anyone listening, you certainly can receive the Lord in the Eucharist. So I know so often we're the hardest on ourselves when we make tragic mistakes like that, but I just want to make that clear in case anybody misinterprets. And to the latter part of your point as well, it goes back to what you were saying about the priest itself. I think somebody needs to have a talk with him about that. But I'll let you respond to Martha as well.
Yeah, well, it used to be the case that canon law said, it still says it, that a woman who has an abortion is regarded as so horrible that, and this is done for her own good, automatically is excommunicated by having an abortion. It doesn't even need to be pronounced by a bishop. And therefore, something more than ordinary confession was necessary to reconcile a woman like that to the church. And I think wisely, Pope Francis has extended the faculty to
bishops.
It used to be a special ministry, Rachel's, what was it called?
Rachel's Vineyard, yep.
Yeah, but now every priest has the faculty to restore a woman to communion with the church, because this tragedy is so widespread.
Yeah.
And, it's typically the woman's responsibility is very small because she's pressured and so on. So, but look, if it's that serious, the canon law still says you're ipso facto excommunicated if you do this. It's not some kind of light thing that President Biden is toying with. Not light at all. And it's not a private thing. It's part of canon law.
Well, look, let me do this. I'm up against the clock. I need to take a short break. If you're on hold, we'll do our best to get you on the other side. My guest today, great conversation too with Dr. Michael Pakulik, and you can get in with us right now at 888-914-9149. Dr. Pakulik, stay with me for just a second, okay? Also, we'll change gears a little bit later in the hour. Got more to get into, but some great calls online. We'll take your thoughts, comments right after this. Hey, looking for a new job? How about one that offers opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
And before our forces are wiped out completely, now is the time to negotiate in order to obtain the best conditions possible. He will be reasonable.
When will the lesson be learned? When will the lesson be learned? How many more dictators must be appeased before we learn? You cannot reason with a tiger when your head is in its mouth.
You're listening to Drew Mariani on Relevant Radio.
Wow, powerful delivery, huh? That's from the movie The Darkest Hour, about Winston Churchill. It's good to be back with you today. Thanks for joining me. We're taking a look today at a lot of different things with my guest, and you're more than welcome to join me anytime you want to get in. The number here is 888-914-9149. Dr. Michael Pakalik joins me. He's the author of a new book that's out called Mary's Voice in the Gospel According to John. And as you know, John lived with the Virgin Mary for over three decades. And we're talking not just about that book, but about a lot that's going on in the culture. And I know if you're on hold, we'll grab your calls. Doctor, before I jump into the calls, very quickly, Maggie and I were just talking during the break about this, and I just thought, you know, how blessed was John to live with the Virgin Mary for so long? Can you imagine the stories that he heard about Christ as a teenager, as a young boy, the teachings that he must have given her, the miracles that must have been worked? Tell me a little bit, just very quickly, if you could, did the Virgin Mary influence John's writings, his gospel?
I think so, yeah. So, here's an example. In the Gospel of John, Jesus uses, and we heard in the Gospel last Sunday, I am, the name of God, I am. Why is that in none of the other Gospels? In the other Gospels, it's kind of the disciples are constantly, they're confused. They don't even know who Jesus is. They can't figure him out, and barely figure him out by the time he rises from the dead. But Mary knew from the moment of conception who he was, and she's very tuned to this. She would pick up and remember use of the name of God by Jesus, where it might have easily just been forgotten or overlooked by the disciples. That's one example. There's so much in the Gospel of John that indicates Mary's joining with him in friendship after all those years of living together.
Well, Dr. Pakalik, we'll have to have you back another time to talk about that in greater detail. If people want to read it, what's the best way to connect?
Amazon is fine. It's published by Regnery, but they sell through Amazon.
Sounds right.
Mary's Voice in the Gospel According to St. John. Also, there for the pro-life listeners, I've written a book about my late wife, who was a great pro-life leader, and that's called The Appalling Strangeness of the Mercy of God. And I think that's a really great read. A lot of people have loved it.
Wow.
That's also from Amazon.
How long ago did your wife pass away?
Well, my first wife passed away now almost 25 years ago, and I married right away. My second wife, Catherine, and I have 8 children. My late wife and I had 7 children.
Wow, beautiful family. Well, that's another story you'll have to share with us, too.
Yeah, you'll have to invite me back.
No, I'd love to. I've loved hanging out with you today. It's been a great conversation. I know you got to run. We only got a couple minutes, and Dr. John Burks was going to be stopping by. But let me grab a couple quick calls. A lot of people want to get in on the conversation. Yep. Linda's in Highland, Indiana. Yep. She's got a comment for you. Hi, Linda. Thanks for waiting.
Hey, Linda.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call. One of the things that I struggle with regarding President Biden and other prominent people receiving communion when they come out so strongly and so often against abortion is that when I'm having conversations with people, including my children, it gives them the impression that you can pick and choose which Catholic teachings you want to follow. And I think that because he is so public and other prominent people are so public about it, it gives people that impression, which is kind of hard to explain to people that I'm talking to. So I will leave you to comment on that.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, well, when people use the word weaponize the Eucharist, I think they maybe mean politicize, and that's because the parties have kind of drawn up, and one side is, you know, pro-life, and the other is pro-abortion rights. And, I mean, but whose problem is that? Like, that's really the Democratic Party that it's really pushed out,
yeah,
excluded pro-life Democrats. It's, you know, that's not being done by the church.
Right.
So that's, we can't take responsibility. You know, you don't want to get excluded from receiving the Eucharist, then fine, then just be a strong pro-life Democrat.
Amen. Mike in Austin, Texas, thanks for dialing in. Good afternoon.
Hey, Mike. Yeah, this is Mike Hanick. Who's this? Yeah. All right, so, Doctor, I have a question about, you had mentioned education. It seems like our society, every time we say that we want to have a virtuous society, we're labeled by NPR and the major networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, as being Christian nationalists. Have you ever heard of that term, and what does that exactly mean?
Yeah, I mean, that means all kinds of different things. It's kind of a movement now that people want to see the United States kind of proclaimed a Christian nation, and you know, that's fine. They can say that. You know, I don't think it ever really was a Christian. There are a lot of Christians in the United States. If we practice our faith well, it will be a Christian nation in the way that's most important. But I'm not part. But, you know, we have to ignore the mainstream media, the legacy media. That's one of the great things about the Internet and various Substacks and sources of news, that they've, you know, we don't really have to pay attention to them. They don't really control the narrative any longer.
That's so true. Brad and Mike, thank you. Mike in, or Brad in Saukville, Wisconsin. Good afternoon.
Well, hello.
Hey, Brad.
Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to just bring up the idea of the separation of church and state. I do believe that's something we really need to do, because, like, sure, my tax dollars, if they went to the local Catholic Christian school, that would be great, but it could also go to a Muslim school. It could also, my taxes could go to a Buddhist school then. You know, it all would depend on my community and what's the majority, you know, of, well, you get what I'm saying. So I really think a school should just be, it should be, if they go to public school, it's, there it is. That's public school, no religion whatsoever in it, because I wouldn't want them to teach Muslim in my public school. I wouldn't want them to teach Hinduism in my school. So I just want none. And then we can choose to teach our own children on our own time.
Brad, thanks. I'll let the doctor respond because we have a moment or two left.
Yeah, I mean, this has been thought about a long time. I mean, the voucher system gets around that. You give the money to the parents, or you give huge tax credits for parents who are already paying taxes for public schools.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's another principle in the United States, which is freedom of expression and freedom of association. And if the government says, here, we'll provide you schools, except these schools won't teach what you believe in, that looks like viewpoint discrimination to me. There's only one thing that can be said once you enter these halls, and it can't be anything related to religion. That's viewpoint discrimination. That's also not American. So we have to find some kind of compromise.
It's tough. Well, Doctor, I want to thank you. Thank you for your time. A lot of calls waiting to talk to you. We'll have you back. We can talk much more. The book, again, is called Mary's Voice in the Gospel According to John. If you want to check out Dr. Pakalik's writing, it's a delight to have him here with us today. He is a professor of social research at the Bush School of Business at the Catholic University of America. And if you want to check out his last name, you might say, well, how do you spell that? I want the book.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
P-A-K-A-L-U-K. So you can check it out.
My father was a salesman, and he changed the pronunciation to Pakalik. So, and that's why it's a lot easier to remember and to spell.
I love it. Thank you for your time. It's great to have you here. We'll talk
soon. Drew.
God bless you.
Goodbye, everybody. Bye-bye.
That's Dr. Michael Pakalik. And I'll take a short break. I'll be right back. We got a lot more to get into. Stay with me. The conversation continues right after this. Hey, looking for a new job? How about one that offers opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
When I was young, it seemed that life was so wonderful, a miracle.
Yeah, boy, time flies, doesn't it? Very quickly, let me just lay this out for you. I just discovered that there was a suburb of Boston called Somerville, and it seems to be becoming a haven for people who have more than one intimate partner in life. The Boston Globe was reporting that nearly 3 years ago, Somerville became the first municipality in the country to pass an ordinance on domestic partnerships that includes multiple partners, polyamorous relationships. And last week they went further. The city council unanimously approved an anti-discrimination ordinance that basically prohibits employment and policing discrimination against those in relationships of two or more people. So I don't know if they include a religious exemption in there or not. There are three Catholic parishes in that city. And I'm sure that there are churches that aren't going to allow somebody in a non-monogamous relationship there to work for them. So we'll see what comes from this. Will there be lawsuits? Of course, those people who are in those relationships make it look like it's, you know, it's all fun, right? They're open about the fact that they share each other and all the pictures for everyone to see, you know. When you have a reality TV show like Sister Wives, where one of the wives, Cody Brown, left because polygamy wasn't all it was cracked up to be. In fact, she's now, you know, this guy I think is now left only with one wife, his real and legal wife. But polygamy is a dead end road, and for Christians, I think we know that. That's not what Jesus wanted. The church has been very clear on this for the past 2,000 years. But when you look at the Old Testament, you see a lot of the characters who've had more than one wife, right? I mean, go back and look at Abraham and Solomon and David and goes on. This can be very confusing. If God allowed it then, why doesn't he allow it now? I've invited Dr. John Bergsma to give us some answers. He's a professor of theology at Franciscan University at Steubenville and a senior fellow at the St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology. And his latest book is a book called Love Basics for Catholics. Great read and a real eye-opener on a lot of these different issues. You can find more by going to johnbergsma.com. or CatholicBibleTeacher.com. Doctor, thanks for being here with us. I was having this conversation with my producer, Tom, a little bit earlier. You take a look at the Old Testament versus where we are today. There was, you know, how many wives did Solomon have? He had a ton of them, didn't he?
Yeah, 700 wives and 300 concubines.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know how you do it. There's not enough days in the week. That's crazy. Maybe that first question I kind of posed, maybe you can break that down. You know, what happened between Old Testament, New Testament? Where are we now? What's the thinking and the teaching behind this?
Yeah. So the Old Testament tolerated multiple wives but did not encourage it. In fact, as you ticked off those characters that had multiple wives, if you actually look at the narrative, if we look at the narrative, Drew, we find that it always led to trouble.
Yep, that's true.
Abraham taking a second wife in Genesis 16 destroyed family peace and harmony, led to fighting between himself, between the wives, between the wives between themselves. David's multiple wives led to all kinds of trouble in his household. Siblings killing each other, siblings abusing one another, and Solomon famously, the Bible's judgment on Solomon was that his wives turned his heart astray from faithfulness to the Lord. So it's not so clear cut, Drew. We have to read the Old Testament carefully under the guidance of our Lord, and He teaches us the principles to get at the true meaning of the Old Testament.
Yeah, my guest today is Dr. John Bergsma. If you want to join us, too, we only have him for a short time today. We'd love to have you. And you can pick up his book. Your book is online, by the way, at your website, I'm assuming, or who's publishing it?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's Ave Maria Press and most online booksellers, as well as johnbergsma.com or CatholicBibleTeacher.com. You can get a signed copy there. Yeah. And unsigned copies elsewhere.
Love Basics for Catholics. Let's talk a little bit about why God allowed this to happen if it was so harmful for people to be involved. And actually, of course, we know it led to the division of Israel. There are secular researchers today also, Doctor, who say that monogamy is a historical anomaly and that we should go back to some kind of, you know, polyamorous arrangement. So maybe you can address those two issues. I mean, your thoughts.
Yeah, my thoughts is that polyamory always is bad for women because it's always unequal in the female direction. because of the nature of procreation. You know, you always know who a child's mother is, but you don't know who his father is. So it always ends up being one man and multiple women, and then women sharing a man. And so it's not equal between the man and the woman. And that's contrary to the way God created us. In Genesis chapter 2, it says, I'll make a helper that's complementary to him. In Hebrew, the word is kinegdo, but that translates in English to complementary, which means like equal to and facing back, you know, so two equals that look at each other. And that is modeled in the monogamous relationship where one man, one woman, there's equality there, and you enter into that mystical partnership, and you share life's joys and life's sorrows. And sometimes it's the sorrows that draw you the closest, yeah, as love. And through that, you learn about the love of God, yeah, because God's love is not polyamorous. He's got one bride, which is his church, mm-hmm, and he is always faithful to his one bride. And that's the model that we follow as human beings.
That's really well said, and it makes it really simple, doesn't it? When you take a look at it like that, very, very simple. So God's relationship with Israel and today God's relationship with the church. Doctor, speaking of Israel, you're going back there, aren't you? I understand you're heading. When are you going back? By the way, for those who are just tuning in, Dr. Bergsma is an expert on the Dead Sea Scrolls, too. He's an expert on the Old Testament. I've known him for a long time. He's been a great contributor here on the network. You were just telling me that you're heading out to Israel. When you going out there?
Yeah, so that's going to be June 23rd to July 2nd. There's still about five or six slots on our tour bus. So if folks are interested, check it out at CatholicBibleTeacher.com. And speaking of, Qumran and the Dead Sea Scrolls, yeah, and the Essenes, they interpreted the Old Testament to teach monogamy, Drew, and very quickly they had three arguments for it. First of all, God created one man, one woman before there was any sin in the world,
right,
and that showed his intention. Secondly, all the humans and all the animals that got on the ark and were saved were all monogamous. They all went in two by two.
Huh.
Whereas those outside were polygamous, and they took a lesson from that. And thirdly, the king of Israel in Deuteronomy 17 was forbidden to have additional wives. He was commanded not to multiply wives. And, of course, that's what led to the destruction of the kingdom because of first David and then worse, Solomon having multiple wives. So they argued for strict monogamy in a way similar to our Lord.
When did polygamy get introduced? I mean, how early do we see
it? Yeah, it's interesting, Drew. We see it already in Genesis 4, that wicked Cain who killed his brother. The sixth generation from Cain was a man named Lamech, and he was the first one to get the very terrible, horrible, no good idea to take more than one spouse. He took two wives, Adah and Zillah. And then in Genesis 4, you read about him bragging to his wives about how he's killed a man for insulting him and murdered another man for, offending him. And so the author, the sacred author, is trying to tell us something by showing us, look, it's this sociopath that brags about his murders to his wives. He's the guy that came up with a bright idea to have more than one spouse.
Wow. You know, yet we're seeing this ancient practice manifest in a big time way today. But again, this is what happens. You know, I knew that as the Obergefell decision, when that came down, that there, when we redefine marriage, then you open up, when you lose a true meaning of what marriage is between a man and a woman, suddenly, you know, how can you say just two men or two women can get married now? Why can't three men? Or why can't, you know, a man have multiple wives? It leads to polyamory, leads to polygamy. Have we thrown open the barn door now, Doctor? What do you see happening in the future here in this country?
Oh, that is a frightful thought, Drew. We have thrown open the barn door, and it could get very bad. The one thing that gives me some hope is that these alternative relationships are very unsatisfying and tend to be transitory, and it just does not work as well as God's plan. And usually it's the women that lose out, even that example that you cited before from that sister wives episode. it's the women in that relationship that end up on the short end of the stick. So if we're really caring about women, which we should, and about children, which we should, they are the real losers in these relationships. So you just have to open up your eyes to see it.
I don't understand. There must be some sort of psychological profile to a woman who says, you know, I don't want the sole attention of my spouse. I'm going to share you with five other women, right? I mean, I don't understand the psychology behind it. To your point, you know, it's always disproportionately in the man's favor. One man and he's got five women, right? Or more or less, or however he wants to break that up. What do we know about polygamy?
Well, we know it was not invented by God. It was invented by the evil Lamech. And we know that it causes social ills for a couple of reasons, Drew. As you mentioned, and as I've mentioned, you know, women end up, you know, on the disproportionate short end of the stick. And we see that in Muslim countries. All we have to do is look at the Muslim countries around the world to observe this in action. Okay. And secondly, if you have these multiple wife situations, Drew, the man ends up procreating too many children adequately to father. And we saw that with Osama bin Laden, you know, who nearly caused World War III.
Yeah.
He was like the 23rd son or something like this of his dad, who had all these multiple wives and was wealthy, and but grows up without having the attention of his father because he's just one of, you know, dozens of children. And that leads to, you know, psychological unhealthiness and instability, et cetera, and, you know, the deaths of thousands in what he did.
That's true. Well, Doctor, we have to have you back when we have just a little bit more time to even unpack this in greater detail. Again, I want to make sure people get plugged into you because I only have a moment or two left here. The book is called Love Basics for Catholics. Best place to get it, again, is your website or online?
Yeah, absolutely. So AveMaria.com.
Great.
And buy it straight from the publisher. Yep.
And information about your pilgrimage, where can they find that again?
Yep. CatholicBibleTeacher.com. It's the first thing that'll splash up.
That sounds great. I hope people will join you. I would love to travel with you one day because what a trip that would be. As I said, Dr. Berger is an expert on the Dead Sea Scrolls. And as I said, when I was in Israel, one of the guys knew of you. I told him you were on the air with me frequently. So have a great trip. We'll talk before then. And again, thanks for making time for us today.
Yeah, you bet, Drew. Thank you very much.
You got it. It's Dr. John Bergsma. There is some breaking news I want to sneak in before I run out of time here. President Donald Trump, the grand jury has voted to indict the former president. Exact charges against the president are not known. This case, as you know, centers on hush money payments to a former porn star. This is historic. Trump has been indicted by the Manhattan grand jury. I thought it was going to go away. Supposedly, you know, they voted to indict him over paying hush money to, I think it was Stormy Daniels. And what charges he faces, I don't know. The news is just coming into me as I speak. We'll give you a breakdown of it tomorrow in much greater detail. I'm sure you're going to hear a lot about it in the days ahead. But the grand jury returned the indictment of Mr. Trump after a vote on Thursday. And it marks the first time that a former president has faced criminal charges. And the indictment, of course, was sought by the Manhattan District Attorney there, Alvin Bragg. Been a lot of talk about this. A lot of people, they were quiet for a while, Bragg's office. But apparently, this is it. Yeah. Look, I'll get into it in greater detail with you tomorrow. Until then, say a prayer for me and my family. I will do the same thing for you. And in about 21 hours, we'll talk again. God bless.